This is DNA And, the podcast bringing you the latest science and innovation in DNA and our health. Today we're exploring DNA and COVID-19. Together with two expert guests, we will discuss how we can read human DNA and virus RNA to better understand the pandemic and its effect on our health. Hello and welcome. So we are your hosts. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Angelos.
So today we're discussing DNA and the COVID-19 pandemic.
Yep. And it doesn't need much of an introduction, right? I think most people are pretty much familiar with COVID-19.
Yeah, it's probably a safe assumption. Actually, no joke. I currently have COVID for the fourth time. Yeah. So this is, it's ironic to be recording this episode.
Yeah. But look at the bright side. We skipped the studio and we're trying this online recording.
Yeah, it's working pretty well from the comfort of my home in isolation. But yeah, all jokes aside, today's episode, I think, will probably be among the most relevant and relatable for everybody listening.
Yeah, and although it doesn't need much of an introduction, maybe we can first give an overview of the pandemic and the topics for today's episode.
So COVID-19, I guess it's the first truly global pandemic in the quote genomics era, caused by the SARS-CoV-2 virus. And I guess in a way, the pandemic's kind of a treasure trove of scientific advances and applications, right? So we've seen scientists from across the globe come together and develop and roll out technologies at an unprecedented pace. And this includes the development of vaccines, of treatments, and of tools to track the evolution of the virus in real time. And we're going to talk a lot about this in the second half of the episode. And the key to a lot of this has been genomics, our favorite topic, the study of DNA and RNA.
Yes, and actually hold that thought on RNA, as we will explain it in detail in a minute. But first, since we lack analogies on DNA, pandemics are like wars against invisible enemies, and science gives us the tools to fight back.
Right. So since we can read the virus's genetic material, it's not invisible anymore. Well, I mean, like, it is to our eyes, right? But it's not invisible to our technologies.
Not to our sequencers.
No, exactly. We know what it is. We know how it works. We can track it and trace it. We can watch how it evolves. And we can respond to it in real time.
Yep. Genomics is like an early warning system. Intelligence and intel, enemy profiling, all in one.
Yeah, and there's a lot to talk about DNA in the field of COVID-19 genetics. So today we're going to focus on a couple of examples of how DNA-based technologies have given us important insight into the pandemic. And just to make a note, if there's anything you find particularly interesting or you want us to expand on more in a future episode, please do send us a tweet at DNA and Pod.
Yes. And first, as promised, we should explain what is RNA. And it's pretty central to the concept of this episode.
Yes. So we should introduce RNA as, DNA's cousin.
Yes. So by cousin, we mean that DNA and RNA are very similar molecules, but they're slightly different. So DNA stands for deoxyribonucleic acid, and RNA stands for ribonucleic acid. Chemically, they're almost identical. Both have a backbone of phosphate with ribosugars, except RNA is missing one oxygen. Anyway, the point to all this is that SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID, is an RNA virus. That means that its genetic material is a single strand of RNA, unlike us humans who have a double strand of DNA.
Yes, we should mention that there are viruses who have DNA as their genetic material. I say who, it's like personification. Who or which? I don't know, a virus is alive? That's another topic.
We're balancing on a very sensitive issue about whether viruses are alive or not.
It's a bit philosophical. Okay, not the focus of today. There are viruses which/who have DNA as their genetic material and those which have RNA. And it just so happens that SARS-CoV-2 has RNA. So with that in mind, today's episode will cover two areas. In the first half of the episode, Angelos and I are going to discuss how variation in our very own human DNA can affect the symptoms and severity of a SARS-CoV-2 infection. And in the second half of the episode, this is going to focus on the genetic material of coronavirus itself and how we can read it and use that information to track coronavirus variants and how the virus evolves and spreads.
And we have some amazing guests in the second half. You will first hear from Dr. Matthew Forbes from the Genomic Surveillance Unit at the Wellcome Sanger Institute, who has been using genomic surveillance to track the SARS-CoV-2 pandemic. And then from Dr. Lucy Van Dorp, who is a UKRI Future Leaders Fellow at the University College London, about tracing coronavirus coronavirus populations in animals and their potential to infect humans. So we've got a lot to get through in this episode.
Yes, but before we get stuck into the science, I think it's important to say that the motivation behind all the science is to reduce the human impact of the pandemic, right? So we know that we get enthusiastic when talking about science, and that is the focus of the podcast. But we should all remember that the pandemic has taken over 5 million lives, and there are millions more people who are impacted today by long COVID or whose educational mental health were affected by the lockdowns. So ultimately, the science is all there to save lives and minimize the impact of the pandemic as much as possible.
Now, everyone's experience of the pandemic was so different, right? We probably all know of someone who was hospitalized during the early waves, or have friends or family who are now still affected by long COVID, or maybe colleagues who lost their sense of taste and smell. Oh, and those were the annoying people, the ones who never got sick.
Yeah, no, I know some people who just say, oh, when I barely had any symptoms, it was just like a cold. And I do get a bit jealous because I was so sick the first time I had COVID.
Okay, so let's get a bit into more detailed stuff. Why do some people get sicker than others? There's a lot known about this now, right? And studies of DNA have revealed some important information.
Yeah, so there's lots of reasons for this. And these can be environmental, related to your general health or your age. But yeah, there's also explanations in our DNA. And that is the point of the podcast, so we'll focus on those. And our DNA encodes every part of us, right? So variation in that DNA can affect pathways which are relevant to coronavirus, such as the immune response to the virus, the receptor on our cells, which the virus uses to enter our cells, how effective the memory of our immune system is. And this is a really big field of research. So in the interest of time, we're just going to focus on two main examples for this episode and how they've taught us about the mechanism of SARS-CoV-2 infection and have led to developments in the clinic. So the first is going to be DNA variation in the ACE2 gene, and the second will be variation in the TLR7 gene. Hello and welcome back. Before we return to our discussion on COVID-19 and human genetics, I have a quick announcement. So if you're listening to this episode in the UK and in the first 2 weeks of its release, you can take part in our book competition. So here at DNA And, we're not only fans of genetics, DNA, and good analogies, we also love a good popular science book. So we have some competitions to win a popular science book with the release of our episodes. So to check this one out, have a look at our social media pages, our Twitter and our Instagram. And the tags are at DNA And Pod, with And spelled A-N-D and a capital P for pot. To enter the competition, like the post, share it, and make sure you're following our pages. And while you're there, why not send us a message or drop a comment and let us know what you think of the podcast and any topics you would like to hear in the future. And now, back to COVID-19. So, Angelus, do you want to start with ACE2?
Yeah, of course. So ACE2 is a gene, so a part of the DNA, which contains the instructions to make a receptor present on the surface of our cells. You can think of it like a doorway that SARS-CoV-2 and other coronaviruses use to enter our cells. The ACE2 receptor has multiple functions, and at least that's what I knew from my field of research. It was most important in what it's called the renin-angiotensin system. More long words, but basically it's a system of hormones which regulate blood pressure.
So I wanted to talk about a study that was published in 2022, which studied DNA variants in thousands of people reported to have COVID infections versus thousands of people who were reported to not have a COVID infection. So they identified genetic variants which were associated with being more likely to have an infection versus not. And one of the DNA variants they found to be associated with having an infection, they reported that this variant actually reduced the amount of ACE2 by 37%, so reduced the amount of the coronavirus door. And this corresponded to an estimated 40% reduction in the risk of a SARS-CoV-2 infection. Pretty interesting, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So we should say that this particular DNA variant is a rare letter change, specifically a change from a letter T to the letter C, which is found in less than 1% of people. The people with the C letter were significantly less likely to have reported a COVID-19 infection. Most of the time, it's quite complicated to interpret chains like T to C because we have to work out what the change actually does. But in this case, the result makes a lot of sense. Less ACE2, less doors for coronavirus to enter through.
So it's complicated for other reasons, because ACE2 actually has other biological functions. It exists for a reason. It's not just there to be a door for coronaviruses. So we do need to consider that changing ACE2 levels could impact blood pressure. What would the consequences be? But actually, in this paper, the authors did check and they didn't find any evidence that this T2C change associated with a change in blood pressure. So that's a plus.
Okay, but get this. Last year, there was a really cool paper in Nature where the authors found a drug which seems to protect against COVID-19 by reducing ACE2 levels. So they discovered that blocking a receptor called FXR, which has high levels in the liver, reduced the amount of ACE2 on the surface of cells. So there's actually a drug called UDCA. Typical long drug name is ursodeoxycholic acid.
It's very good.
I'm not going to say that again, but thank you very much. So this drug is already widely used to treat liver disease by blocking this receptor FXR. And get this, they tested a pair of donated human lungs, which were not suitable for transplant, and showed that UDCA reduced SARS-CoV-2 infection. And in 8 healthy volunteers who took the drug, their nasal levels of ACE2 and the SARS-CoV-2 virus were reduced. Lastly, they looked at clinical outcomes of people already taking UDCA to treat liver disease and found a correlation between taking the drug and less severe COVID-19.
Yeah, that paper was so interesting. This is like a best case scenario for scientists, right? To find a drug that is already approved, is already used in humans. We know that it's safe and it can be repurposed. So you don't need to go through the 10-year process of developing a new drug. So this was very exciting because UDCA, like I said, safe for humans, it's accessible, it's cost effective, it's relatively easy to manufacture and store. So this overcomes cost and distribution barriers. But another plus is that it doesn't target the immune system. So when you get individuals who have a weakened immune system, their response to vaccines might not actually be super efficient. So this alternative method is a really great option for individuals potentially who have a weakened immune system. Oh, and yeah, so at this stage, we should also mention that when the pandemic started, just another interesting fact, it was quite widely thought that COVID was affecting the lungs and was a predominantly respiratory condition. And later on, science showed that an important part of the disease mechanism was actually an impact on the blood vessels. So the lungs contain a high number of blood vessels, and that's one of the reasons why they're quite highly affected and affected first.
Yeah, that's right. And in fact, this endothelial dysfunction, I'll go into it in a minute, was associated with more severe cases of COVID-19. Endothelial dysfunction, what do we mean by that? Imagine that endothelial cells make up your blood vessels, and now imagine that these blood vessels are like a highway. So in this metaphor, the endothelial cells are playing the role of the traffic light system. And to understand endothelial dysfunction, just imagine what would happen to a very busy highway if the traffic light system just stopped working. It would be completely dysfunctional. But let's stay with COVID severity for a moment and look at another example. This one explains how genetic studies revealed one explanation for severe COVID-19 infection, which involves an overreaction of the immune system in people whose immune systems are initially less efficient at recognizing the virus to start with.
Yeah, so on this topic, I wanted to discuss a study from the Netherlands, which discovered this mechanism. So in this paper, so this was May 2020, so it was quite early on in the pandemic. So the group in the Netherlands, they wanted to investigate why there was more men admitted to intensive care with severe COVID-19 than women. So at the time, there were just under 400 patients who had been hospitalized with COVID-19 who were younger than 35 in the Netherlands. And that's around 3.5% of all the hospitalized patients. So it's a small proportion. But in this age group, 7 patients sadly died, but 6 of them were men.
So at the time, it wasn't really known why there was a difference between the sexes, but this study provided the answer, right?
Yeah, so I think there was a suspicion that there might be a genetic explanation involving the X chromosome.
Right, so that would make sense, of course. To explain, biological females have 2 X chromosomes, while biological males have 1 X chromosome and 1 Y chromosome. So if there is a single DNA variant which affects the function of a gene on the X chromosome, biological females have a second X chromosome as a backup, whereas biological males only have 1 version of the X chromosome. So if the gene is disrupted, then they don't have a backup option.
Their study followed 2 sets of brothers who were admitted to intensive care with COVID infections who were aged between 21 and 31 years. And by sequencing their DNA, the researchers found that all 4 men had DNA variants on the X chromosome, like they suspected, which were predicted to switch off a gene called TLR7. And interestingly, the both families, they had different variants. They weren't exactly the same, but they had the same consequence of being predicted to deactivate TLR7. So that's actually, from a geneticist's perspective, very strong evidence, because it's from two independent families, both pointing at the same gene, that TLR7 is the cause. But we should say that these DNA variants are extremely rare in the population.
Yeah. So TLR7 stands for toll-like receptor 7. And it basically encodes a protein which binds to the virus's RNA, and it triggers the immune response, specifically the production of signaling molecules called interferons, which are like the sirens or alarms, because what they do is that they interfere and they say, hey, there's a virus here, get to your stations. If there is nobody to turn on the alarms, the viruses have more time to replicate before the immune system is activated. Then, instead of one or two policemen, you need to send out multiple police squads.
Exactly. Okay, so that's a good analogy. But if I explain it in biological terms, so the first response with TLR7 is technically called the interferon response. And if that response is not strong enough, then the virus can slip through, it can replicate. And the consequences of this is that the second stage of the immune response overcompensates, and you get something called a cytokine storm. So cytokines are signaling molecules involved in the immune system, which trigger inflammation. So if you've got too many of them, you're going to have too much inflammation. And some recent studies have demonstrated that genetic variants which completely inactivate TLR7 basically result in an almost complete inactivation of that interferon response. And the interferon response you can think of as like the antiviral response. So multiple studies of DNA variants have now implicated that this reduced interferon response, the early alarm system, is involved in severe COVID-19 infections.
So this information has revealed an important pathway in our immune response to COVID-19 and an explanation for severe infections. And that has real-world impact by informing treatments. There are actually a few existing drugs which have been repurposed to treat patients who are critically ill with COVID-19, which effectively inhibits the cytokine storm by blocking cytokine signaling molecules called interleukins. Quite a few of these drugs are currently used to treat autoimmune conditions to reduce inflammation, and so they have been repurposed and demonstrated to effectively promote recovery in severe COVID-19 infections, where excess inflammation becomes dangerous.
Cool. So I think those were our two examples that we covered today. But just to generally say that there's a lot of genetic studies, and we only focus on these two examples, but now there's been a lot of genetic variants which have implicated broader pathways in both your likelihood of getting an infection in the first place, but also how severe that infection will turn out to be.
And that is all for part one of DNA and COVID-19. Stay tuned, because very soon we will be releasing part two. And there we talk to Dr. Matthew Forbes and Dr. Lucy Van Dorp about genomic surveillance of COVID-19, but also genetic reservoirs of coronaviruses in animals and the zoonotic potential to infect humans.
Yeah, I feel like we really like human genetics, so we hogged the first half of the episode and chatted about it between the two of us. But in part two, we're going to invite some guests on to talk all about the viral RNA, so coronavirus RNA, as they're the experts. And stay tuned to listen to our guests.